We're now holding the first parak of Rosh Hashanah parak, Mishnah Gimel. First of all, remember that the lunation of the moon, meaning from one new moon to another new moon, is 29 and a half days. Okay? As we said yesterday, 29 days, 12 hours, and 44 minutes, or 793 chalakim. Which means if it's 29 and a half days, it means that some months will be 29-day months, and some months will be 30-day months. And they more or less alternate. Now, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, and really until even later, until the year 358, the Common Era, from Moshe and Aaron all the way till 358, that's quite a long time, most of Jewish history, the way that they worked the months was based on Edim. Witnesses actually had to see in the evening the new moon, which we said, is, as we explained before, yesterday a little bit, that the new moon appears, and then it's in the beginning of the month, it's, so to speak, trailing the sun. So what you'll see is at sunset, the right after the sun sets, then you'll be able to see the moon in its having the new sliver, the crescent, trailing behind it for a little while before it also goes, well, it sets in the western horizon. Now, the issue is that when the moon is too close to the sun, of course, after not too long thereafter, a sliver is visible. The Rambam says once it's there's a 9 degrees of elongation, meaning 9 degrees of arc between the moon and the sun and the moon. Less than that, it's too close, and certainly in the even when it's a mere 9 degrees apart, elongated. I'm trying to think of a word in English. Nine degrees of what do you call it? The technical word isn't coming to me, but it doesn't matter. I'll explain to you. When you look at around you, so you're seeing 360 degrees of around you. Angular. The word is not coming to me. In any case, but so the distance between the sun and the moon is called, technically speaking, it's elongation. That's the angle between the two. In other words, so to speak, if the sun would be directly over your head and the moon would be on the horizon, you'd be talking 90 degrees of elongation. So when you look in the sky, the moon will be trailing behind the sun when, in the beginning of the month. So if it's less than 9 degrees of arc length, that's what I wanted.
What
arc? Was it called arc length? Arc length, I think. Then it was 9 degrees. Then you, it won't be visible. The crescent will be too small to be seen. But even if it's 9 degrees, oftentimes if it's too high in the sky, you won't be able to see it because the glare of the sun overshadows the moon. So what happens is, to be able to see that very tiny sliver of a moon, usually it's visible right after the sun has set. So you're talking about the moon low on the horizon, on the western horizon, and you'll see. Now remember, I showed you with my hands, if this is the horizon, and this is the sun setting below the horizon, it's the western horizon here, so then the moon will be facing like this, or like this? This way, or that way? Exactly. The way the Gemara describes it, the horns of the moon point away from the sun. But certainly, intuitively, I think it's much easier to think that the moon points, like a circle, so to speak, points toward the sun, because, like I showed you yesterday, the half of the moon is always lit up, so it points. By the way, as an aside, a fascinating aside, just it's worth keeping in mind, totally irrelevant to this, but nice, sort of, I find it very inspirational on an ongoing basis, is, if you remember your geometry, so every, a plane, a flat surface, two-dimensional flat surface, is defined by any 3 points. Remember that one? So a line is 2 points, and a plane is 3 points. So the solar system, meaning the sun, the earth, and all the other planets, are all in the base in a single plane called the ecliptic. It's like a flat, so to speak, if you took a piece of paper, or so to speak, a plane, and you extended it out from the sun, you could put essentially all the planets right in that in line. It's in a flat, almost two-dimensional. That's why you often think of it as like the planets going in the concentric circles in the same plane. Okay? Even Pluto out. Pluto's been demoted from being a planet anyways. So the moon is almost in the exact same plane. It actually can be, it's tilted, I think, just over 5 degrees of arc length. But anyways, considered the same, in line. Which means, by the way, you have 3 points right away to identify the ecliptic. You have the sun, when you see the sun setting, you have the sun, and you have the moon, and you have the earth, which you're sitting on. Which means whenever you see the sun and the moon, you can right away pick up where the ecliptic is, and therefore all the planets will be on that line. So, I mean, I think it's sophisticated. For argument's sake, if we're watching the horizon and you see the sun setting over here and the moon's over here, right, falling behind it, that means that all the planets will be on this line. And if you tilt your head, so you'll see like the Earth and the sun and the moon, and you can see that Venus is very bright now. If you look in the night sky, you'll see it very bright. So you'll see Venus, and oftentimes you can see Mars and even Jupiter. See, they'll all be in that line. All the planets will be in that one line. So you can spot the planets very easily. If you see a bright star, like there's a moon over here, and the sun just set, and you see a bright star way over there, it's definitely not a planet. Because they're all going to be on that line. So you can orient yourself with the whole solar system by tilting your head and going, oh, I see. You can envision yourself in the solar system going. So any kid?
Can you say that one of the quote-unquote clues of Hashem is that if there was the slightest degree out of sync on that plane, it would all collapse? Because of the gravitational pull helps keep it in balance.
Yeah, it would cause. That's true. It's called havoc. It's a chaotic system. Even though they look at, so we're getting farther afield here. But anyways, it's very fascinating. Even though the most classic, so to speak, like a mechanical system is the planets, because there's no friction out there and it's simple. One basically just gravity is the only thing that you have to worry about, and they have fixed velocities and fixed orbits and so on. Just because the small differences in gravitational differences, how things move, even 10 million years out, which is not very long in terms of these things, we have no idea to know like where the planets will be. You can't guess if Mars will be on this side or that side. It's amazing. Even like something as consistent and simple as the planets' movements, which have very few moving parts, put out 10 million years, you don't know where it's going to be because things play on each other. But in any case, beyond that point is that the moon will be seen, what I call pointing, or the horns pointing away from the sun. That's very important, because that's actually one of the questions we'll see later on. They actually ask the Adam to identify if they really saw it. They weren't astronomers. That was one important question. Okay, so that's what happens. So what happened is, on the night, we'll call the night of the 30th. That was the new, could be, the month could be 29 or 30 days. So then it could be on the night of the 30th, let's say, meaning, or the very end of the 29th day, right, which will go into the night 30th, the people will see the moon low in the western horizon, new moon appearing. And then they have to go to Yerushalayim to tell the Beis Din that we saw it, and they'll testify. We'll see later on in the parak here, they need to be kosher Adam and so on, like normal Adus. Okay, we'll see that more in a bit. If the Adam don't show up, that means that we'll assume that it was, if a month has just 29 days, meaning on the 30th day the moon is seen, so that month is a short month. It's called a chaser, like a lacking month. It's a mere 29 days instead of the full, let's call it 29 and a half, or 30. And if they don't come, the Beis Din will automatically assume it's a 30 day month, and they'll make the 31st day going to be the Rosh Chodesh, the first of the next month, and that kind of month will be called a male, a full month, or a mu'ubar, like a pregnant month. Okay, so. That's that. So the basin really depends, and the basin, by the way, is it may not be in Yerushalayim. I don't know if I said Yerushalayim a second ago. It doesn't need to be in Jerusalem, but it does need to be the Sanhedrin. Okay, there are different levels of courts. There are a regular basin of three, which you're familiar with, like Matan Nedarim and stuff like that, and they judge momentous issues, financial issues. Then you have a basin of 23, which we don't have Bizman Hazeh at all, but they were in different large cities, and they would actually judge even Din and Nefashos. They would execute during the Sanhedrin HaGadol for that. But then there was the Sanhedrin HaGadol, the 71 person Sanhedrin, which sat in the temple complex there in Lishkas HaGadol, and that Sanhedrin would decide things of national importance, of national policy, if you will. And one thing of national policy, of course, national importance, is Kiddush HaKodesh. That determines the whole nation's fate and future in the days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and etc. And therefore, you need to have a Sanhedrin HaGadol, a 71-person Sanhedrin, to do Kiddush HaKodesh. So, I said Jerusalem. The truth is that everyone knows that after the destruction in 70 of the Common Era, the Beis HaMikdash was moved. The Sanhedrin HaGadol was moved first to Yavna, and then went to Usha, and back to Yavna. Okay, the Sanhedrin ran around a little bit, but wherever the Sanhedrin HaGadol is, that's where they would give their testimony, and then they would accept it and Mekadosh the Chodesh from there.
Maybe I missed something. You said that all the months are the same length.
29 and a half days.
So,
But the Torah doesn't allow for half days.
Sorry?
The Torah doesn't allow for half days, so you have to either make a 29 or a 30-day month.
Okay, because they wouldn't see it because... When you say they wouldn't see it,
they may not see it... Month. Yeah, well, they may not see it either because sometimes it's not visible, they're too close together. And sometimes the new moon is too close to the sun to be seen, less than 9 degrees. And sometimes they're cloud cover and so on. So they won't always see it.
Sorry, this is distracting. If they don't see it on the 29th and it's cloudy,
they automatically make it a 30. They automatically, they wouldn't see it on the, let's say, on the, if they don't see it on the 30th, then they'll automatically assume that it was seen on the 31st. It'll be Makar's 31st day. Yeah, so that, exactly. So you, especially in the wintertime, you often don't see the moon. Now, the Rambam actually lists that the mitzvah, it's a mitzvah midoraisa, one of the 613 of Kiddush HaChodesh, it's on the basin, on Sanhedrin to sanctify the new moon. There are actually three parts to that mitzvah, says the Rambam. The first part is making the calculations to figure out when the new moon should be. So this is even in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Now it's already been prefabbedly done for us, but actually Gemara says, in Rosh Hashanah, they had like a committee, a special committee for calculating the... Calculating the new moon when it should be, very mathematically intense. Even the Yerushalmi says sometimes they have to go to the outside of mathematicians to help them with it. It's very complicated. It really is very complicated. And they would determine when the new moon ought to be. That was step one. They wouldn't even entertain the thought of Adam unless they knew it was going to be there anyways, right? And vice versa. If Adam came and they knew it should be there, they would just basically disregard them. They basically pressure them, ask them hard enough questions to stump them, to get rid of them, or find them. So they knew ahead of time when it should be seen, but then that's step one of the three parts of the mitzvah. They have to figure out when it should be. Then step two is they actually have to get Adam, and they have to scrutinize the Adam, which means even if the Beis Din knows tonight should be the new moon, if no Adam come, that's too bad. They're not Makadosh yet. They wait for Adam. So they need both the calculation and corroborating Adam, both things. And the third step in the process is spreading the news. That's, and then now the Beis Din says Makadosh, they sanctify it, now it's a new month. They have to now spread the word. I know in Zman Hazeh we have calendars, but in those days you just didn't know. And certainly without communications like we have today, you're sitting out there in Alexandria or in Syria and Aleppo or wherever they sat, Babylonia. So like you just wouldn't know. And it's obviously very relevant when you should be fasting for Yom Kippur, etc. So they needed to know. So the third part is spreading the word. Now, these Mishnayos here, the next two Mishnayos or so, I don't know why, are written in a confusing way. Really, these Mishnayos are stumpers. Mishnayos are easy. They're not hard Mishnayos. But they're written in a way that really, I find very baffling. And many times I learned it. I thought you're really stumped. Like, what is going on here exactly? For no good reason that I can understand, except to force you to need a Rebbe.
Being the Kaddish on the 30th. That it would be automatic and no conditions for the 30th.
That's right. They never had 32-day months. They didn't do it. They just automatically did it. Exactly. So let me explain a little bit outside of first how it's working, and then you'll see the Mishnayos become smooth. But if you don't read that way, the Mishnayos are funny. First of all, in the olden days, originally, and the Mishnah will say this later on, I don't know why it didn't say it now, first off, but how it used to be is they'd have a system of fires. Okay, basically when they would be Makadosh the month early, so that on the 30th day, then on the night of the 31st, that first night, so it's really the second day of the month then, they essentially would light a fire on Har HaZeisim, and they had a system. We'll explore the system, but the point is, basically from mountaintop to mountaintop, they'd see the fires, and in a few hours, that mountaintop signaling would spread out throughout the exile, all the way to Mesopotamia, whatever they call it, to Iraq, and around. Everyone would know that today is when they were Makadosh the new month. This was originally, the original process. Exactly, it was on the 2nd, the night of the 2nd. Remember, the night comes before the day. They had to do it because, of course, Beis Din only convenes during the daytime. So what will happen is, it'll be seen in the evening. That morning, the Beis Din will be Makadosh the month and say, oh, today is the 1st. It was seen last night, which is the 1st of the month. Then that night, so the 2nd of the month, that evening when it gets dark, they'll light the fires. And everyone knows that shows that the fires are on the 2nd day of the month. We'll get there. Good question. We'll get there. We'll get there in just a moment here. But so that is the original system. Then what happened was these Kusim, they were temple period converts. They were not whatever. They were not good Jews. Let's put it like that. And they converted, and they were malicious, and they fought with the Jews, and they alleged they were the real Jews, and they actually conspired to not have the second temple rebuilt and so on. Anyways, when Ezra came back, he was irritated with them, and he forbade intermarrying with them and so on. They weren't good people. But in any case, so they were malicious, and they ended up botching things around by lighting fires to confuse things. It just mix everybody up. So then the rabbi said, okay, this fire system won't work anymore because the kusim are causing mischief. And they began to send out, later on, they sent out like private emissaries and shluchim, messengers, say, oh, they were mekadesh in such and such a day, so people could know what to do. So our mission is going to pick up talking about, for now, we're going to abandon the idea of fires. We'll revisit it later on. And now we're talking about the shluchim later on in history who are going out to tell people what day it was done. Now,
that would have to be a very sophisticated network of people. Are they sending?
We'll see everything. I'm giving an introduction here. So now, this is the most confusing part, I think, of the way the Mishnahs are written. The pasuk says, "Asher tikro sam b'mo'adam," you will declare them in their proper time, meaning the months. And every time it says moed in the pasuk, that is the Torah's way of telling you, you can be, if it's got to be done in the proper time, the Torah allows you to be mechal Shabbos for that. So the edim, the witnesses, are allowed to be mechal Shabbos to come and inform the basin that they saw in the previous night, they saw the new moon. How would they be mechal Shabbos? The most basic way is if they're outside the tchum. Remember, if outside of 2,000, almost outside the city, you can't travel on Shabbos. But they would be allowed to. And they're breaking Shabbos. The Torah allows the breaking of Shabbos. This is one of the deals. If you have Eidus to testify, you can go on Shabbos and walk a distance. We'll see. We actually discussed this a little bit in Sachem, if you recall, that the Chazal or Mishar, a person could walk 10 parsa, which is like a parsa is 4 mil, so it's 40 mil. A mil is about a kilometer, roughly. 10 parsa comes up about 28 miles. So they say a person could walk 28 miles in 12 hours. Like from morning to night, you could walk 28 miles. So if you sing it in the nighttime, like at sundown, and the testimony can be accepted until any time during the day until like nightfall of the following day, you have essentially 24 hours to walk. So that puts you within walking range if you're within, like, say, 56 miles. That's far away. Right? So obviously people would walk way out of the tchum. So you can walk. I'm sorry, I forgot to turn this off. So you can now, they would let people walk that far, but only to bring the Aedus to the basin. The people spreading the testimony to tell the people in Syria when the new moon is, they can't be Mechal Shabbos. Okay, for some reason that's clear. The machlok is there, but for some reason the way the Mishnahs are written sort of gets a little lost in, if we don't speak it out here. So that's the issue with the Chil Shabbos.
The basin
didn't convene
on Shabbos?
Basin did not convene on Shabbos, nor at night. No, the basin did convene on Shabbos.
Somebody saw the moon on Friday night.
That's the case here. They'd walk over Shabbos. They'd walk over Shabbos.
Basically, they would be there to receive him.
That's right. They would be there to receive him. And they'd wait and see who would come. They were anxiously coming. And not only could they be, as we'll see in the Mishnahs, be Mechal Shabbos by walking outside the Tchum, if they couldn't walk, someone could carry them. Later on, we're going to see that they needed to have character witnesses because then more kusim started coming and causing mischief and giving false testimony. The witnesses needed to have corroborating witnesses to join them as character witnesses. They should accept them. And so they could also, because the kusim caused more mischief, they could carry weapons and they could ride horses if they needed to, and they could bring food if they needed to, whatever needed to be done to, in terms of Chil Shabbos, to come there. That's the story. So the Mishnah says inside, okay, Al Shisha Chadashim, there are 6 months, on 6 months, the beginning of 6 months, Hashluchin, the emissaries, the messengers of the Beis Din, Yotzin. They leave Jerusalem or wherever the Sanhedrin is and go and tell the exile what day the new moon was sanctified. So these are 6 months where during these 6 months essentially there's going to be a Yom Tov to be done, or therefore an observation that needs to be an observance, like a Yom Tov typically, or a fast, and therefore they need to go to tell them. So this is Al Nisan Mipnei Pesach on the month of Nisan, the second of Nisan, I guess, they go out and tell people when Rosh Chodesh is, so people can know when to observe Pesach properly. Al Av, in the month of Av, we're going in order, starting from. Someone pointed out to me that just like we count our months from Nisan, even though our year starts in Tishrei, it was pointed out to me that the same is true. Originally, that the Goyish calendar, the Gregorian calendar, as you call it today, it was also used to count from the vernal equinox in the springtime, like we do. And you can see that the months September, which means Sept is a prefix for 7, October 8, November 9, and December 10 were the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th months from that count. Interesting? Anyway, so they had like that also. In any case, now, So they would go out to Nisan to tell people for Pesach. Al Av, the month of Av, b'nei ha-tainis, so the ninth of Av needs to be observed. You'll see that we're not going to mention there are two other fasts which are of lesser importance, that are, which are the 10th of Tevis and the 17th of Tammuz. They didn't go out in Tevis or Tammuz. The rabbis weren't so bothered about those lesser rabbinic. This Tisha B'Av is already, I remember discussed this, it's more than just rabbinic, it's actually like prophetic, let's call it. It's from Tanakh. Whereas these ones are just rabbinic in nature, and therefore they weren't so bothered if people messed it up by day. It wasn't a big deal. The third one is Al Elul. They go out in Rosh Chodesh El, but they Rosh Hashanah, tell people when Rosh Hashanah was. Now, think it for a second, you're going to say, wait a second, that won't help, because Rosh Hashanah could be, El could be either 29 or 30 days long. The Gemara asked the question, and it explains that the way the rabbis engineer things, they try to be very careful to make sure that El was consistently just 29 days. So you could rely on the fact that the 30th day, they went after Rov, they know the choice in the matter, the 30th day of El, so to speak, was Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara actually says, since the time of Ezra, there never was a 30-day Elul. So they were good about that. They kept things in check, so people could assume that the 30th...
But it really makes no difference, because they made 2 days
well,
of Rosh Hashanah.
Well, then, it's correct. There is subsequently a 2 days of Rosh Hashanah issue, exactly. So that covers us, as one as that. But even for a long time, it was like that, since the medium time. Right? But then Al Tishrei, they'd go out on Tishrei anyways, the first after Rosh Hashanah, they would go out again. But they tekanas ha-moados, to fix up the holidays. Now again, so you say, well, they could assume that like the business El assume Rosh Hashanah. But the problem is, you know, when it comes to Yom Kippur, people are nervous. So the people are gonna end up fasting 2 days. We don't want that to happen, so we want people to not have, you know, the hearts beating in their chest. Oh, what happens if this is the once in a lifetime 30-day El, and I'm going to have to fast 2 days? So no, they still send people out so people could know when Yom Kippur was, and of course, Sukkot falls after that. Al Kislev in the month of Kislev, Mipnei Chanukah, right? Val Adar in the month of Adar, Mipnei HaPurim, on Purim. Okay, so these things all have mitzvahs, and therefore those 6 days, next 6 months, they would go out. Ukashaya based on Mikdash Kayam. Yotzin af al iyar, there'd be a 7th month they'd go out for when the base of Mikdash was there. I say 7th, but I put a little asterisk, I'll come back to it. They'd go out in iyar, which is the month after Nisan, mitnei Pesach Katan, what we call Pesach Sheni, on the 14th of Nisan, on the 14th of iyar, if you weren't able to observe Pesach properly because you were tamei or too far, so you have a second chance of doing Pesach Sheni. We discussed this in Pesachim, so they'd have to tell you when Pesach Sheni would be.
Maybe we can get into this later, but it's not clear to me when the Shliach went forth for Rosh Hashanah. It was the beginning of Elul or at the end of Elul?
For Rosh Hashanah, he would go out on the first day of El, or whatever, the second day of El, the beginning of the month of El.
Okay, second day of El.
And they tell people...
So then they would calculate when Rosh Hashanah was.
Right, 30 days from Aleph El, exactly. They'd assume it's a 29-day month, the 30th day would be Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Exactly. Now, the...
This testimony was given even after the Beis HaMikdash.
That's right. The Sanhedrin didn't actually close shop permanently till about 425 of the Common Era, but from 358 already it stopped. No, it moved from Yerushalayim in 70. Remember, in 70, right away it moved to Yavne. And then for the next almost 400 years, it ran around, up and down, ending up in Tiberia, Tsipori and Tiberia, and then that was it. Under the Romans, they couldn't continue with past about 425. Well, yeah, I mean, after everything. Yeah. Remember, yeah, for sure.
Interesting that they didn't go out for Shavuos.
They didn't go out for Shavuos because Shavuos is always 50 right. days from.
But
from
they Russia. Did go for Pesach Sheni.
Yeah, because Pesach Sheni is the 14th day of Iyar, which could be one of 2 days.
No, so the same thing would be for Shavuos. The same problem would be for Shavuos.
No, because Shavuos is always 50 days, regardless if it would be the 6th or the 7th or the 8th. Yeah, so it's always 50. Exactly, exactly. It doesn't have to be in the 6th. You can't. Exactly.
You only know when Pesach came out.
Omer, you count Sfiras Omer, you know when Shavuos is automatically, exactly. Right. Even though it may not be always on the 6th of the Sivan. Correct. Right after Rosh Hashanah. Right after Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. Right after Rosh Hashanah, there we go. Now, when the Beit HaMikdash actually stood, I said there's an asterisk, because actually it wouldn't be 7 months, you're back to 6 months, because they wouldn't go out in Av anymore. Rabbeinu Yonah speaks out that they would, not Tisha B'Av, but it was like a holiday, celebratory day when the Beit HaMikdash stood. So it was still only 6 months when the Beit HaMikdash was around Av. So they went out in ER, and when the Beit HaMikdash wasn't around, they went out in Av. Okay? Fine. That's straightforward. In terms of shluchim, just as a side point, interesting halachic side point. So even though edim, we'll see in a minute, need to have two kosher edim, for shluchim, you only need to have one shaliach. And the reason why, not an aid. The reason why is because there's a basic halachic principle that something that will certainly come out, sooner or later, everyone will find out the truth. So then the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says here that people aren't going to lie about that. They'll be found out to be frauds. Certainly, everyone knows sooner or later when Rosh Chodesh was, the word will come out, at which point they'll be found out to be fraudsters. Therefore, people just aren't... You can assume that no one would lie about something like that, where they're for sure going to be caught out, and therefore you could rely on even one person. And even if you didn't have a shliach, anybody, if someone said to you, I just came from, Israel, and I heard the Beis Din was Mekadesh on Sunday, you could assume that was true. You don't need any formal, witnesses. Okay, so that's Mishnah Gimel.